This Focus with Paul W. Smith podcast is sponsored by Victor's Home Solutions. Visit victors.com, experts in home solutions.
All right. Happy Monday to all of you. Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason. Talk about a last minute pinch hitter getting thrown in. Here I am.
Calling in the lefty or the righty. I'm not sure which one.
I like to think of it as there's some kind of Batman symbol that sometimes WJR just has to throw into the sky, and they say, Alberta, come help us. Here I am.
Right.
So if, Danielle's laughing. That's not very good.
Well, happy. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, sorry. You can make fun of me. I'll give you 10 seconds. Go.
No, I was saying she's the one who designed it. That's why she's laughing.
Does this have a big bald head on the symbol?
Where's that? Oh, yeah, it does.
I know she loves a good bald guy, as does my wife. You know, good is relative. So, fun show. It's a busy show. You set up most of it. I got a couple things we'll throw in there. Let's start off with the countdown to the debate. I just heard the Biden's at Camp David, Trump's on the campaign trail. Mike, there's three specific thoughts that I would like to purvey to everyone out there. One is, there's got to be a lot of conservatives, I've heard this echoed a bunch lately, who are either Trump fans or in the Trump generality camp because they can't see Joe Biden serving another 4 years and potentially a Kamala Harris, who I don't even want to get on the soapbox about that. She might be the least active, least liked VP of all time. But there's this sentiment going around that, geez, I hope Biden does just well enough. Have you heard this?
No, except for between the two of us, because if he does well enough, this is like the Democrats' last chance to make a change. Is that what the line of thinking is?
I mean, I think that fair-minded people are like, look, no one wants the guy to get on stage for 2 hours, you know, on a hot mic without notes, without handler, so on and so forth, and make an absolute buffoon of himself because he's the president of the United States. Do we really want to look foolish? That's one sentiment. Another one is, if he absolutely bombs this thing and it's horrendous to watch, then clearly the DNC is going to be in desperation mode, and that's where they throw the Michelle Obama, you know, thing in the... sorry, Joe, you have to go. And now all of a sudden Trump's got a whole different battle to fight. And that, frankly, is scary because the most winnable election for him right now is the same Joe Biden we've watched for the last 24 months.
Is Michelle Obama interested? Because I've heard time after time that she wants nothing to do with the presidency.
I don't think that you can give any credence to any of that stuff. The Obamas basically have been running a lot of the DNC, in my opinion, and the opinions of people way smarter than me, for the last 12 or so years. And she is so wildly popular and easy to like, despite the political side of things, that it would be a catastrophic blow to the RNC should they put her name out there. That would be very, very difficult for Trump to overcome, in my opinion. The last part of that, too, is if Biden is as fragile as he seems to be, and we're not watching cheap fake slash deep fake, so on and so forth, that these videos of him kind of wandering off into the wilderness and bumping his head against the microphone and so on and so forth. If Trump really goes after him, does anybody want to watch a guy beat up a kitten?
Right. When is it? At what point is it not a fair fight?
Yeah, it's not going to be a good look if he just thrashes the president of the United States around at his elderly and vulnerable age, if we're to believe what we're being told. Hey, did you know that there's no chains in the NFL anymore as of this season? The 10-yard chain gang is a thing of the past.
Wow, what are they moving to something more computerized or something? Or
some kind of laser measuring system, which I know this is a absolute head snapper in terms of the direction we were going with the Trump Biden debate versus the chain gang in the NFL. But this is what I call real progressivism, when we're no longer going to have a guy. Do you remember a couple of years ago, one of the refs had to get an index card, if I remember correctly, and shove it between the tip of the ball and the chain for a first down to see if there was actually any room between the two?
No, but I mean, chain, you know, these chains are not an exact science. You're kind of at the mercy of where they spot you and where they interpreted the play on it and all that stuff. And I mean, if we have the technology, I mean, people have been talking about this with the strike zone, right? I mean, if we have the technology to be more precise, then why are we using an inexact science of just trusting the human eye?
Yeah. And if they're going to do that, why not do that with the end zone too? If the ball breaches the actual end zone line, if it's laser and there's something inside the ball that lets it know where it passed its last point, this seems like it'd be a non-issue. We don't have to watch, you know, 5 minutes worth of slow-mo angles to see if it was actually a touchdown or not.
Well, you said they have something inside the ball. Is there concerns that that might affect the way it travels through the air when it's thrown? Or
I don't know. We should ask Lomas. Maybe he knows that. I mean, this announcement was just a few days ago, and I watched a couple of the commentators, you know, that I like to watch on YouTube talk about. It's just kind of a cool thing. I mean, in general, we shouldn't leave it up to human error, but there is always going to be that contingent of people that insist that human error is part of sports, bad calls, bad refs. And as a Detroit Lions fan for so long, we know all about bad calls and bad refs.
Which is why we're not content to just say human error is part of the game, because you know, like a Patriots fan or a Chiefs fan might say that, but once your team is screwed out of going to the Super Bowl or just winning a regular season game, you're pretty much ready to get the human error element out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. I was on Guy this morning early, 6:48. I was on with those guys because his team was texting me asking if I could comment on the Supreme Court ruling that had to do with sustaining the Moore tax case, where this family essentially was appealing a $15,000 IRS bill because of the way it was taxed as an unrealized gain. They're saying, we never realized this gain, but because it's a partly foreign owned entity within the United States, that the 2017 tax code that was rewritten kind of had them in a position where they felt this isn't fair. And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled 7-2 against them, essentially saying, nope, you got to pay this tax. And this has caused quite a stir online, because the conservatives and the liberal types, when it comes to tax policy, are all essentially trying to prognosticate about what this means for the future. I actually think it's a pretty good decision for the current taxpayer who doesn't want to have the Supreme Court now deciding, or Congress deciding, what they're going to call income. Sometimes vagueness is the key to not getting yourself into trouble when it comes to the tax stuff.
Yeah, you don't want to tell on yourself. Sounds like these people could have used you.
Well, we don't do a lot of tax work. I mean, you do a lot of tax efficiency work in the practice, but you know, when it gets into the real details of what is considered income and not, some of this stuff was done under Trump's reign, so to speak, to discourage people from investing in foreign entities. This one in particular was an Indian-based company, but also to discourage companies from divesting some of their interests overseas. But, you know, when it comes to these things, there's always going to be a fraction of the people who say, look, everyone needs to pay their fair share. The rich are getting away with murder. I totally disagree. I think it's actually the complete opposite of that. But this ruling is kind of much to do about nothing. I don't think anything is going to change wildly. Now the Supreme Court, I don't know if you heard during the break, is going to start hearing cases on gender-affirming practices. That is wild to me. That's going to be probably the most fascinating thing that the Supreme Court's going to hear, because it might shape the way all of these states start treating or setting precedent for the mixed gender stuff. And are we going to start paying for surgeries with little kids and so on and so forth? It's wild stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, this issue has made its way up to the Supreme Court pretty quickly.
Yeah. Listen, a couple sad stories coming up. We touch on the Oakland County deputy that was killed yesterday. Chris Swanson will join. Everyone hang around back in WJR. Focus show just a few minutes. Well, some stories are unavoidable ones we have to touch on. Great guest, great topic with the U.S. Supreme Court ruling on guns and domestic violence. But I'd be remiss if we didn't bring up that just recently now, Bradley Reckling, who was an Oakland County deputy, was shot and killed what looks to be a bit of an ambush as he followed a stolen vehicle in an unmarked car. No dash cam footage is available. Friend of the show, Mike Richard, commented, this is a sad, sad thing. Certainly didn't see it coming. Sheriff Chris Swanson joins us from Genesee County. Sheriff Chris, thanks for joining the show. And before we get into the Supreme Court thing, do you have any remarks or commentary on this really sad thing from the other day?
Oh yeah. I did reach out to the sheriff, who's a dear friend of mine. Oakland is obviously a partner in a neighboring county, and they've experienced so much trauma, the whole community. And this vicious ambush is exactly why law enforcement is revered by people, because this father, this husband, this investigator, while people were resting, was out trying to just solve a simple stolen car, and gave his life for it. And that's what law enforcement does. And he's a hero, and he's a hero forever because he died doing what he loved.
Yeah, indeed. Well said. That's an incredibly sad thing. Wife left behind, kids left behind, just trying to follow the rules and get someone back their stolen car. Unbelievable. Chris, as we look at this Supreme Court case, which really is dealing with the ability to seize weapons away from people who have been convicted of domestic violence, what is your take on the whole story?
This is a gun responsibility issue, not a gun control issue. And as law enforcement has for years removed the threat and the accessibility to weapons, this is a plus for people whose lives are threatened by violent encounters. I guarantee, Chris, there's people that are listening right now that know exactly what a domestic violence situation looks like. They have felt it. And a majority of these situations involve a threat with a weapon. That's terrifying. It doesn't remove people's rights to own weapons. It just takes away their ability to access them when they are in a state of threat. And that's vital for every one of us.
Yeah, Genesee County Sheriff Chris Watson again is joining us. And Chris, you are not advocating in any way, shape, or form that the government seize people's weapons. But you, what I hear you saying is in these kind of cases, domestic violence cases are largely ones that were reported where there is a threat with a weapon. And you are 100% in support of this.
And you make it very clear, and that is true. This is not a gun ownership or a gun control issue. This is about responsible gun ownership. And as a gun owner, as somebody who's literally talking to you right now with a pistol on his hip, who I have been in law enforcement and a gun owner, even gun owners understand and respect gun responsibility. And I can tell you, I've experienced it firsthand when you have a domestic situation turn violent. Just in Genesee County in March of this year, we had a suspect, Bennett, 28 years old, shot and killed his domestic partner with a shotgun. The lady in the next apartment came around to see what's happening, killed her. She was 51 years old, confronted law enforcement in the street with a shotgun, levered it and just pulled the trigger and tried to kill a CLOW officer. He returned fire, and three of our deputies and officers shot and killed Bennett. I say that because these are highly volatile situations, school threats. Every time we have a school threat in Genesee County, it's a protocol throughout the state. We go to the school. We identify who's the individual who made the threat. Do they have the ability to do it? Are there weapons in their car, in their locker, at their house? And by taking those weapons away, look what happened in Oxford. If the weapon was taken away, lives would have been saved. And that's what we're trying to do. I say this, and I know speaking in sound bites is important, but it's important that I add this. If I'm driving a car and I go to a party and I'm too intoxicated to drive, I want somebody to take my keys, not taking my ability to own a car, but taking my ability to use that and hurt myself or other people. That's what we're talking about. Not to be confused with gun control or gun ownership. Not at all. I am an advocate of gun responsibility and common sense.
That's a great analogy. So for those who are wondering then, and hopefully you can unpack some of this, there's got to be, I imagine, a gradient of the severity of some of these domestic violence cases, right? Somebody, you know, slapping each other back and forth because they had too many beers and they got in a fight over who didn't do the laundry or something like that is probably different to some degree than fisticuffs and blood and actual real severe violence. Does the court system or this particular law take any of that into account, or are they basically saying that in a scenario where domestic violence has been claimed, even then, despite a conviction, that weapon can be seized until it's adjudicated properly?
I think you bring up a great point because you're right. There's a wide net and these calls, not even just domestic violence, but anytime there's a threat. But specifically to your question with domestic violence, yes, there is a accelerated force continuum. And some of these are just verbal confrontations, but there are domestic violence encounters that are just under deadly. And many times weapons are used as a threat. I say this when it comes about threatening animals. You know, 6 out of 10 domestics involve a threat against just a domestic pet. And when those threats happen, 9 out of 10 of the domestic violence actions take place, physical assaults. So there's an algorithm that goes there. All that the Supreme Court ruled was we're not talking about your ability to own a weapon or not. What we're talking about is Rahimi has not shown responsibility because after he did his domestic in 2019, he assaulted another person. He assaulted the original victim one more time and had 5 more shootings, 2 drive-bys, 2 road rages, and a dispute at a McDonald's. These are the individuals that do not reflect responsible gun owners like myself and many of your listeners.
So, Chris, in your realm then, in Genesee County, have you had any instances recently you can think of where the officers on scene would have the discretion to say what weapons are in this house, registered or not, and the ability to take them? I mean, who makes that decision in the spur of the moment?
Without a doubt, it's law enforcement. And law enforcement has a great responsibility and also has proven that we take all variables into consideration. Just going back again to our school threats, we have had dozens and dozens of school threats over the last several months, and we go to make sure there's not accessibility to those weapons. And part of that, and especially with Michigan voting in our red flag laws, are these are extreme risks orders. There's still a process. You know, the courts are still involved. It's just not one person, and it shouldn't be just one person. This is something that involves the system in order to protect the rest of the innocent people.
Yeah, and do the officers receive any blowback for that in terms of what you've seen so far? Do you think laws like this on the books will help them, will alleviate the pressure from them, as if to say, listen, I have permission to take this weapon because it's better for everybody involved, and if it turns out after the court system that you're, you know, free of this particular charge or claim, you get the weapon back? I mean, is that how it works?
You know, what you just brought up is a great example of messaging. You know, you being on WGR right now, you message to people, and that's what has to be done at the street level, at the house level. It's all about the messaging, and ultimately it's to keep people safe. And when folks are either under the influence or having in some kind of a psychotic episode, a mental health breakdown, it's our responsibility to keep everybody around that community, that school, that house safe. And so the process that we have is an initial process, just like taking somebody to jail. That doesn't mean they're charged. That means we have enough probable cause to believe a crime was committed, and we have a process in place. We have variables we have to meet. That's the process of law enforcement and justice. And when we show this person had a manic episode, this person has a PBT of, you know, 0.23, this person, you know, busted out the windows and did all these different things. Now the courts have the ability to, that was a good decision. We're going to uphold that emergency protection order. We're going to uphold the personal protection order. And we're going to hold people accountable. But in the same time, let's get this individual the drug and alcohol counseling they need, the mental health treatment that they need. There's a whole process. These broken families, many times a domestic call in law enforcement is the final straw before it breaks. And we right. got to be there to protect everybody, kids, spouses, domestic partners.
Always the kids first. Chris Watson, Genesee County Sheriff, thanks for joining the program. Let's hear from you on this. Do you agree? You can pick up your phone and tell me if you disagree. 800-859-0957. The Supreme Court says they can take your weapons away if you are part of a domestic violence case. That seems to be a good move from most angles, but if you think not, let's hear from you. Right back. No, phone lines are open. 800-859-0957. Two matters that we got into that I'd like your feedback on. One is, what do you expect from this debate later this week, Thursday night? Do you have any of that sentiment that you hope the President of the United States, Joe Biden, does just well enough to kind of squeak by and stay the opponent of Donald Trump? That seems to be an easier matchup for a surprise swapperoo that could happen later in the year. Do you want to see him get eaten up and spit out by the voracious, loud, powerful Donald Trump? Or do you think that makes the nation look foolish? No one wants, as I said before, to see somebody, you know, beat up on a kitten. It's just not fair. So I've heard it from all sides, and I'd like to get feedback from you. The other thing, Mike Parsons, that's a really kind of fascinating ruling by the Supreme Court, and to hear it from Chris Swanson, who came on, the Genesee County Sheriff. He's in love with this idea. He wants certainly not gun control, but gun responsibility, taking guns away from domestic abusers. Now, he said something that I guess is I've never heard before, that a large percentage of domestic violence cases include threats with a weapon. Did you know that that was the case?
No, but it doesn't really surprise me. And that's kind of why I wanted to get someone like Chris Swanson on, someone who's in law enforcement, who actually has to, you know, deal with the effects of this law and enforce these, you know, and enforce these not only restraining orders, but these gun bans. Not gun bans. We're not, because it's not a gun ban, but, you know, it takes someone's gun away if they do have a restraining order and they're in violation of this law.
Is that what the law actually says, though, is if there is a restraining order or if just it's a domestic violence call, do they show some discretion and say, look, based on what I'm hearing you both say, I feel like this situation is very volatile. I have the right to take your weapons away. Do you have to be convicted of something or have a restraining order approved and enforced to lose the weapon?
From what I understand, there has to at least be a restraining order in place. That's how I understand it.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said to Chris, and I think he gave a very fair answer, but some of these situations are, you know, there's a lot of yelling and screaming. Maybe somebody slaps somebody, that kind of thing. I don't think any of us are in favor of men and women, especially hitting each other, especially when a man is responsible for hitting a woman. That gets, of course, wildly hard to delineate. We just saw that happen with a very notable Detroit person. I'll leave names out, but you know, he had a restraining order and he got beat up in the public forum and lost some credibility with listeners and readers. And then of course, you know, months and months later, he was acquitted. Basically all these charges were dropped. Now, certainly in a scenario where the government comes in, the police come in and they take those weapons away, is that fair? I'd like to know from you. 800-859-0957. I can't imagine myself in that scenario. I hope I never have one of those, but it certainly seems like it's the right move, if nothing else, because we're taking every possible variable off the table. Let's go out and visit with the phones. Ken and Livonia, what's happening, Ken?
Well, I just want to share with you something that people don't seem to be focusing on, is that the primary job of the President of the United States is to be the head of the U.S. Armed Forces, that they have to deal directly with people like Putin and other world leaders. I want someone who's a grizzly bear in their personality. I don't want someone who's a wimp. And so do we want He-Man? Using the old character He-Man, do we want Captain America? We want someone tough. And to me, that's Trump. And I think we'll need to think about that. What do you want for your president? There again, that his number one job, commander of the U.S. Armed Forces, a wimp or someone strong?
Ken, that's an interesting viewpoint. I will give you credit for saying we don't want a wimp. And I don't think anybody wants a wimp. What would be the other side of that equation? If you look at a president in control of so many things, of the nuclear button, of the way we interact with countries that intend on harming us, both economically and potentially militarily, from Russia to China to North Korea, so on and so forth. When you look at them as a president, the lack of self-control sometimes and the ability to be almost an outsized version of yourself, that rubs people the wrong way. Are you willing to tolerate that in exchange for the overt manliness that comes along with Trump? Do you like that attribute more than you find his lack of self-control sometimes concerning?
Well, I look at his entire career, Donald Trump, and I do believe that overall he is in control, and I would trust my health and safety to him more than I would his opposition.
All right, fair enough. Thanks for your feedback. 800-859-0957. Mike Parsons, that is one that I've heard quite a bit. And oftentimes when we talk about foreign countries who are starting conflicts, some of that commentary goes back to, you know, this never would have happened with Trump in there. And that's not necessarily a nod to Donald Trump, the president, the character of the president, so much as it is he gave off an air like, don't mess with the U.S. or I'm going to not get you off my list first. I mean, don't mess with Trump was kind of the vibe that he put out there all the time. Do you think there's merit to that?
Yeah, I mean, being unpredictable and you know, maybe volatile or at least, you know, not predictable, that is a strategy when it comes to foreign policy because, is this worth finding out what this guy is going to do? So, yeah, there is a little bit of merit to that, but
it's not a lot with the Ukraine conflict, right? I mean, he said very early on in the Ukraine-Russia conflict, this never would have happened under my watch. And it was one of those things that kind of sounded pompous and silly, but then I think a lot of people actually said, yeah, he might be right though.
Right.
He like, now, I'm not, no nonsense out of you kids over there. You just all relax.
Right. Now the question is, you know, how would he have diffused the situation? Would he have drop the hammer, or would he have ceded more territory? I mean, I guess that's anybody's guess, but I and just overall, I mean, you always hear, you know, people, our adversaries are watching our president do this, this, and this, and they're laughing or they're rubbing their hands together, you know, getting ready to make the move they've been wanting to make. But, you know, I do remember last week, I think Donald Trump did say that he might throw the debate because he wants Joe Biden in there. Now, I think he was just talking smack, but, you know, kind of going back to the original theory, you know, even Donald Trump has been echoing that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't want my president to talk smack. I want my president to talk firmly, gently, firmly, assertively, and humbly all at the same time. It's the cocktail of leadership that we seem to be lacking so much in the United States these days. But that's just Chris Alberta's opinion, you know, and Mike Parsons too. What, you got text floating around in there too?
I do. So going back to the Supreme Court's decision on that 30-year-old law about banning people, domestic abusers, from having guns, it does say here that they have to be under a restraining order. So a lot of people are asking about due process. I'm guessing that's your due process. If a judge decides to give out a restraining order, that would probably be the due process to ban you from having a gun under that law.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. That answers some of the questions that you and I had too. All right, well, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back with Todd Zott. He'll fill us in on the cyber attack that has got all these dealerships across the country scrambling, unable to do paperwork and sell new cars. And that's not good for anybody, especially the person trying to buy the car and get out of there on some hot new wheels. All right, take a quick break. Right back. Hey, anybody want to win a trip to see the Eagles at the Sphere, Las Vegas? It's an iconic band at an iconic venue. The Eagles live at Sphere, Las Vegas, performing 12 shows this September 20th through November 9th. And you could be there. We've got two trips for two with flights, a stay at the Venetian Resort Las Vegas, dinner at Chica Las Vegas, two tickets to the show, plus a Vibe VIP experience package. Prizes provided by Live Nation. To enter for your chance to win, text this hour's national keyword, which is RUN, R-U-N, RUN, to 95819. For full details and official contest rules, visit WJR.com. Pretty cool. Hotel California, Mike Parsons. Okay, if you
Desperado.
Desperado as well. Agreed. Cool old band. Look, if you want to buy a car in Michigan in the next handful of days, you might run into some problems. The dealerships are scrambling. And to fill us in on what the hell is going on with the cyber attack that's affected dealerships all over the country, Todd Zott joins us. He's the president of Detroit Auto Dealers Association. He's a partner with Zott Auto, has dealerships all over the place. Todd, thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, Chris. Good afternoon. How you doing?
I do that all the time. Good morning, good afternoon.
I know. Good morning, good afternoon. You know, actually, you were just talking about that Eagles at the Sphere. That sounds like fun.
It does sound like fun. We can all go together. We can grab your buddy Steve Gabar and take him. He owes me a couple bucks from golf.
Oh, let's go.
Hey, so what is going on with this whole cyber attack deal? This is really new. Someone's being held at ransom. What's the skinny?
So early in the morning on Wednesday, which was the 19th, there was a cyber attack on our company that provides our dealership management software, CDK. So out of abundance of caution, they shut down and shut off all of their dealers nationally out of the system. About 15,000 car dealers across the country, more than half of car dealers use this software to manage their business.
Okay.
Tried to get the system back online on Wednesday afternoon. Early in the morning on Thursday morning, a second cyber attack again shut down the system out of abundance of caution. And it was reported that I think on Friday that yes, it was a ransomware attack. And there were reports, although CDK hasn't said this, that they were going to pay the ransom. And they are, the good news is we got some updates over the weekend that restoration is in process, and that's going to take days, not weeks. So that's kind of the update.
So that's good news. In your industry now, everything is so digital. Is the CDK software also part of the inventory management, or is it essentially what you're doing to process deals, uplink things to the Secretary of State to get new plates and registration, so on and so forth. Like, what part of the process is creating the logjam?
So CDK is a suite of products, starting with a CRM or a customer relationship management software. Their product called eLeads, we only use it at one of our stores currently. So at 4 out of the 5 stores, we're getting leads or communicating with customers easily. The fifth store, it's a little bit more of a challenge. They also, we purchased our payroll processing through them. And the good news there is payroll is up, so we can keep our employees paid. Actually, we're doing payroll this morning for last week. It's a little bit more of a manual process because lots of those systems interact with that. So, you know, we're doing a lot of things in service as far as pencil and paper. So the dealer management software will be typically where we write up a repair order or, you know, start your paperwork on your new car deal or your used car deal. And, you know, that's not available to us. So we found lots of workarounds. You know, we're open. I don't know of a single dealer that's down for this. We're inconvenienced. And, you know, we're working really hard not to inconvenience the customer. It's inconvenient for us. We've got some probably some catch up to do on the paperwork side once the system comes up. But other than that, you know, we sold a lot of cars last week and we're selling cars again today and servicing cars as well.
Yeah. Todd, is there anything that, like, a lesson learned from this? We've seen this happen in other industries. I've seen it happen in mine where some of these massive CRMs go down and you have to go still old school. And for the younger guys and gals in my business, some of it's like, well, you actually have to take out a piece of paper and write that down and then go look something up manually. Is there any kind of lesson learned in the sense that, hey, if we run into this again, now we got a couple workarounds that we can keep in our back pocket?
Yeah, I think there's some things we learned. You know, we learned that, you know, we do e-contracting on the sales side. And, you know, we don't use it as much as we could. And this is kind of forcing us to use it because another system we use is called Route One, and that's up and operational. So we can actually figure out deals and actually contract deals through that system. A couple of pieces of paperwork that the Secretary of State here in Michigan requires us to have a hand signature on. We're actually using PDFs, you know, using Adobe to fill those out, print them out, get them signed. And the other system that's down is Michigan's, it's called a CVR or computerized vehicle registration system where dealers use that to, you know, make it real efficient for the dealer, for the Secretary of State, and for the customer that we can, you know, basically, you know, give a customer a license plate at the time they take their car. That system's down. So now we're back to kind of the old way where we used to have, now we have to package up the entire deal and drive it down to the Secretary of State's office and register the car that way.
Yeah, cool. Well, listen, you're in a unique position with the Auto Dealers Association and the Zot family of stores. What is the health of the business look like right now from a consumerism standpoint? In terms of supply and demand, we had the microchip issues and some of the stuff with the electric vehicles creating some different incentive packages. Is it a good time right now to come in and look at a car?
Yes. Yeah, that's a good question. So yes, supply has in many cases caught up with demand. So you got a much more balanced equation there where you didn't a year and a half ago or a year ago even. So today there are more incentives and there is availability. So there's plenty of cars to go look at. You know, there's a few hot vehicles here and there that are a little bit tight on supply, but that's usually the case. So I would say we're kind of back to a normal process when it comes to supply and demand right now.
Great. Yeah, listen, great to fill us in on that. The cyber attack environment is a new level of terrorism in many ways to e-commerce all across this country. We're sorry to hear that's happening to you guys, but the encouraging thing is it sounds like it will be over soon. Todd Zot, thanks for joining. Mike, that's a pretty interesting case where something seemingly so small and hyper-focused on one particular industry could just logjam potentially kind of a whole sector for a handful of days. I was just in a dealership getting my car out of service last week, and everyone was kind of walking sideways and having all these private discussions, and there was people waiting around everywhere. And now I may have run into that same thing and not even known it.
Yeah, and it's amazing how just clicking on one thing that you think is innocuous could bring almost an entire industry down to its knees. I mean, I almost fell for something in my personal email. It said that it was my cable company and that, you know, my account had been suspended for non-payment, and to click here. And if it wasn't for the fact that I was on my internet at home, I might have panicked because the internet is how I do my job and fell for it.
Yeah. Listen, I'm going through this whole period of time right now where one of my cards that I use for almost everything expired. And I forget how many things I had linked to that for auto.
That's how I almost fell for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't pay attention to much of that stuff until someone sends me an email that says, hey, we're about to shut your internet off, man. You going to pay us or what? I'm like, yeah, I'll pay you. And then you got to go remember all your passwords. That's a whole different ball of worms. All right. Back after the break, we'll visit with Tony Michaels and the great Paul W. Smith about tonight's fireworks. Well, there are not many things as nerve-wracking as having on the line the man whose gigantic shoes you're trying to fill. And tonight is the night of fireworks in Detroit out of Gross Hill. Fabulous event. And on the line, we have not only the great Paul W. Smith, but Tony Michaels, president and CEO of the Parade Company. Hi, guys.
I defer to the Wizard of Oz and Ooze. Ooh, ah! That would be, of course, the Wizard Tony Michaels.
No. I'm on with the Paul W. Smith and Chris Alberta. Thank you. Tonight is the Ford Fireworks, and we couldn't be more pumped. Could not.
66th annual, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, 66th year. And truly, Paul, you know I say this every year. This is really much bigger than last year. Same 24 minutes, but we jammed it. Just jammed it. Yeah.
And every time you say that, I say, you know what? It seems impossible, maybe improbable, that each year could be bigger and better, but it's true. Each year is bigger and better. You pump more into that 24 minutes than the year before.
Yeah, we really tried. But, you know, this really isn't possible without, you know, Ford Philanthropy, Mary Culler, the president, Bill and Lisa Ford, Jim Farley, the Ford family, Ford company. I mean, think about what they do in this community, Central Station and everything else. And here they are with us year in and year out. I'm just so fortunate. We really are. And everybody else. And everybody supports us at tonight's fundraiser. 2,500 people coming to the fundraiser tonight, which you, sir, will be doing the pre-show from 7 to 9.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. We used to sit there through the fireworks. If you can imagine, Chris Alberta, and you can because you've been part of the WJR family long enough, that we would actually broadcast on the radio fireworks that are dependent upon the spectacular showcase of showers with colors and beautiful bombshells, and yet we cover it on the radio. And by the way, I believe, I don't know, are we still going to have the audio on during the fireworks themselves at 10:06? If we're only on the pre-show now to get everybody there safely and ready and know what's going on at this big fundraiser at the rooftop Ford party, do we keep the station on and the mics on the fireworks themselves, or do we go somewhere else at 9 o'clock?
We go somewhere else.
Okay. Because that would have been, would have been just as funny as having us broadcast that, just having the mics open. That's what Channel 4 is for. If you can't get there to the party, tune in to Channel 4. Now, I promote them. I'd love for them just once to say, you know, Paul W. Smith at WJR is on an hour before we come on with our show. But I'm not really holding my breath after all these years.
I can I send a little thank you out that for the past day, I've been working on getting our copters up in the air with TSA and so on. And they came through. Wonderful, wonderful group. They do such a great job. But Warren Evans and his team and Chad Newton at Metro Airport and Patty Fantasian and so many people helped us. And our copters, along with WDIV's copters, were just approved. And we are elated, just elated.
That's just to get the flags across at the beginning, right?
Yes. Yeah, the Tigers are playing at 6:40. So the Tigers were wonderful and gave us clearance that we can, you know, fly the copters. But then we had to kind of resubmit to TSA with that approval, and it took a little bit. Debbie Dingell came through, Warren Evans, everybody joined in to help out poor little Tony here. And what great people we have in this city. We really
Listen,
do.
Chris, you're hearing for yourself how much work goes into these things. None of this is easy. The coordination is phenomenal. We thank in advance all of the various police forces that are going to be there to make sure that we're all safe. And all of the things that the Wizard of Oz and Ooze, Tony Michaels, has to go through, Because he's all set for the children of all ages that are going to come to this party tonight, going to come to the fireworks all over the place. Ford Motor Company, a tote bag with all the flashing sunglasses, the airbrush face painting. It's just really an awful lot that goes on. And in the end, all of the money from Up on the Rooftop Party, where we'll be broadcasting WJR from 7 to 9, all of that money goes for the cause of the Parade Foundation. And you want to talk about events and things that they're involved with. Think about all of the things that, Tony, you are a part of. Run through them for everyone, because I think they start to we've had so much going on already this summer and spring, and so much more to come. But think about it. I saw you talking on television the other day, whether it be the NFL draft or the music movement festival. I mean, tell the list and the things that you guys have done.
Well, look, our core events are, of course, America's Thanksgiving Parade presented by Gardner White, the Ford Fireworks, the S3 Turkey Trot, Hobnobble Gobble presented by Ford, and then we help out in other areas. So if somebody needs us, we love to help. We love to be a part of things, putting on some runs around the city, things like that. But, you know, this is our core. And, of course, we build the floats. So we do all of those great things. And, you know, Paul, you talk about collaborative efforts. None of this is done without the greatest mayor in our country, Mayor Duggan, and his
Absolutely.
Team, including
Absolutely.
The number one police chief. And I was just on WBIV with Chief James White and touting everything that they do. And it's just our city right now is moving fast, and it's good, and it's strong. And it's up to groups like us to make things better every single year. And it can't be done without partners and great people. Cannot.
That's the truth. We go tonight from the Ford fireworks that will start at, I think you said, 10:06 sharp.
10:08.
Okay, must have been the rotation of the Earth that had something
We moved it. We moved it 2 minutes.
Okay.
Right. Is that going to change it for you? Is that going to change it?
I didn't get that message. Okay.
Hey, guys, Tony, tell us if you're last minute, if you want to throw the kids and the wife in the car and you want to participate in these festivities, what are the best tips for people who may have not had this on their radar? They're hearing it now and they say, how do I get to be part of this? What should they do?
Come to downtown Detroit. They're already lining up at Hart Plaza. There's probably about 40 people in line. It opens at 2 o'clock. They closed Hart Plaza when the Detroit police have said there's too many people. You can go to Belle Isle. They take the first 3,000 cars, and boom, it goes fast. And after they take the 3,000 cars, then you can only walk across the bridge. But there are so many areas. The day is so beautiful. Come to downtown Detroit and take this in. I promise. This show is going to be the best ever. And Paul knows the music track only gets better. Thank you.
It's true. And as you can tell, he picks out the music track. He does ask some of us for a song or two, but along the way, Chris Alberti, you're doing a great job. Thanks for taking over. I'm visiting with family, but I'll be there tonight from 7 to 9 for the broadcast, the pre-fireworks broadcast. And then a quick note, Mark Hollis will be in. For Mark Hollis, of course, works at Rocket Mortgage and WJR, and I thought it would be, frankly, better for Mark to be out at the Rocket Mortgage Classic from noon to 2 than me. So that's working out very well, so we'll have great coverage. No one will have the coverage WJR will have of the Rocket Mortgage Classic the next several days, including with Mark Hollis from noon to 2, and the whole station is going to be out there. We support all of these great events. In fact, events that help continue to make Detroit great. And WJR is always going to be there. Thanks to Steve Finitieri, Ann Thomas, the whole group of people that work behind the scenes to make these things happen. And so I salute all of them, and I salute you, Chris, for doing a great job. Thank you for making it possible for me to have some time off.
Thanks for the easiest segment I've ever done. Tony and Paul W.
Well, right. You won't run out of things to talk about with Tony or me on the air with you.
I just wind you up and let you go. I don't have to do a darn thing. Have fun tonight. Stay safe. Put your earplugs in if you need me.
Thank you.
All right, Mike Parsons, back in just a few minutes with Dr. Alex Zaid. Everyone hang tight. You're going to want to hear this one. 80s music. follow-up in fireworks conversation that I was barely a part of. I didn't mind that one bit. It's Paul's show, after all. If he wants to take over, he can take over. One of the things that we have spoken about briefly on this show when I'm hosting, but never really got in depth on, is the longevity stuff. I'm a big fan of longevity studies and hormone replacement and all the things that I believe in the medical community they may have been overlooking for quite some time. And as we live longer and longer and longer, we're not necessarily carrying this good health and virality on through all these aging years. And we have a fabulous guest today, good friend of ours, Dr. Alex Zaid. He's the not only a family medicine guy, but he's the owner of Icon Anti-Aging out in Birmingham. And I have found to be just an absolutely sterling representation of what really good hormone study and hormone replacement therapy can do for some people. Alex, thanks for joining.
Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate being on.
Absolutely. Look, you're a young guy in the medical field in a relative sense, and you have chosen to dive very head-on into hormone replacement studies and therapy for folks that want to get into that. I find it absolutely fascinating on two fronts. One, we have no idea why, in males especially, hormone and testosterone levels specifically have precipitously dropped over the last 50 years. Is it environmental? Is it diet-related? But what's more, why does the medical community as a whole not really jump into this bandwagon? Everyone seems to want to keep it at arm's length.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. As to the rates in which testosterone's dropped, there's always that statistic that a 35-year-old male today has 50% of the testosterone that, you know, the same age male had sometime during, you know, World War I. And that's probably attributed to a lot of the things that you mentioned. In terms of why the medical community has not supported the use is probably something a lot deeper than we can get into on the show. But I'll tell you this. When you take a 50-year-old guy and you replace his testosterone to the levels that they were in his very young 30s, that same guy has improvements in cholesterol. He has improvements in his insulin resistance. He has improvement in his truncal obesity when decreasing weight. And sometimes when these things happen, that same guy doesn't need to take a cholesterol medication. He doesn't need to take a blood pressure medication, and he doesn't need to take a diabetes medication. So I'll kind of leave that with your listeners into making their own conclusions of why some people might not celebrate or endorse the replacement of hormones the way that I do.
Yeah, Alex, you bring up a very, very good point. I'm not a tinfoil hat guy, and I certainly don't want to endorse in this program the idea that the entire medical and pharmaceutical community has some kind of nefarious plot. But one thing that I have noticed in all of my studies and conversations with friends is that many of the same symptoms that men in our age bracket, upper 40s, 50s, even in early 60s, start to try to address via other things. Their cholesterol is too high. Their obesity, at least on the chart, is too much. They lack some of the same vigor and enthusiasm they had for exercise, for sex, for kind of the quality of their sleep is often really, really suffering. And when you attribute some of that to the dip in testosterone, people get into a weird kind of paradigm where they say, yeah, but I'm not going to go and take steroids and things. I think, can you clarify for us that somebody who chooses, as many women do when they experience menopause with hormone replacement, if someone chooses to take testosterone, what is the difference between that, for example, and taking exogenous steroids like a bodybuilder? I mean, often things get cobbled together. They're not the same thing.
Yeah, and I think the most important word is replacement. Replacement says that we are just refilling or replacing something that you once had. So in my practice, we use something called bioidentical hormones. And this is basically as close as you can get to the real thing. And I'm not prescribing doses that are super therapeutic. Our goal really in nature is just to take that same 50-year-old man that I was talking about and take him back to his testosterone levels that he had at the age of 30. And that number is different for everybody. And oftentimes we don't know what that number is. What you're going to see with bodybuilders or WWE wrestlers is they are taking testosterone. They're just taking 5 to 7 times higher than the dosing that you'd see in a practice like mine. And they're also taking a whole slew of non-FDA-approved, illegal black market medications. And those are where the side effects of things like, you know, the terms roid rage or, you know, mental health issues really come into play, is when you're abusing black label or black market, rather, medications, or if you're abusing on-label medications. very similar to, you know, abuse of a diabetic medication would put you in the hospital, or abuse of, you know, almost any medication when abused is going to cause issues. But yeah, I think a lot of the misconceptions come from the idea that people are taking outrageous amounts of these medications, when in reality, when you come to a clinic like mine, we're testing you very often. We're making sure that you're staying within these normal ranges, which most men really after the age of 40 have dipped down to subtherapeutic levels. So I'm just bringing you back into the normal range.
Right. So basically, Alex, the way that God built your body is in terms of optimizing these numbers is no different than someone who, for example, has turned to being a vegetarian or a vegan and they don't have enough iron. So they take an iron supplement to bring that blood level back up into normal so they can optimize how their system is working. Is that right?
Exactly. We're just taking you back to what you once were. And the funny thing in medicine is testosterone is listed as a controlled substance. So when we want to replace this for males, me personally, as a prescribing physician, I have to jump through a lot of hoops to do this. But it's accepted and understood that for women, we need to replace estrogen that's been lost. And this is something that's done daily in your typical run-of-the-mill OBGYN office. So there is a little bit of a dichotomy between males and females with the word optimization or replacement.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So in some circles, I'm sure that you get looks from other doctors, other physicians, and they say, geez, are you really sure you want to get into that? Do you have patients that come to you because they know that you're doing this, you specialize in it? It is a very interesting kind of adventurous corner of that world, but you're so academic about it that it makes everyone feel better. Do they often say to you, hey, would you mind talking to my regular doctor about this?
Yeah, and I do it 1 to 3 times a week. And this is something that I've helped so many of my colleagues and so many of my seniors that I trained with actually bring into their practice. I just think that my current practice is going to be the model of family medicine, internal medicine, or primary care in 15 to 20 years. I don't think that this is going to be a hyper-specialized office like what I have right now. I just think that patients are getting more educated. They're becoming more aware of the things that are available to them, and they're seeking out physicians like me. But in reality, this is something that should be offered to everybody. I'm not selfish. I don't want to be the only doctor that's offering this. I just think that it's something that's vital. Longevity is, you know, if you look up Google Trends, the word longevity over the past 24 months has skyrocketed. People are obsessed with how can we squeeze the most out of life. And when I say that, I don't mean just how many candles are in the cake, because nobody wants to be 90 and decrepit. What I mean is you want to be 90 and living. You want to be alive and living at the same time. And really, without optimizing, all of us have seen what happens after a certain age. Bone health, cognitive health, lack of sleep. All of these things really can be attributed to our hormonal loss. Just look at a chart for a male. As testosterone goes down, the list of problems just grows. So, yeah, I mean, I'm talking to doctors all the time and educating them. And for those that are interested and really willing to take the extra step and learn and read about it, the literature is there. The literature is there, and it shows what replacement of testosterone in a male will do for their overall health, for their mental health, and for their longevity.
Great. Dr. Alex A., thanks for joining. He's the owner of Icon Anti-Aging and out in Birmingham. Give him a look if you have any of these questions. Mike, let's follow up on that. You and I back in just a brief few minutes. Phone lines will be open, 800-859-0957. Well, phone lines are still open, 800-859-0957. If you want to chip in the next 9 minutes or so on the big heavyweight debate this Thursday, if you'd like to chip in on anything else that's going on in terms of the gun issue with domestic violence, people who have restraining orders, getting their guns taken away, great. Love to hear from you on that. Mike Parsons, tell me what you thought about that last interview, because that's something that has been really kind of sticking in my craw lately. And I'm not much of a, like I said, a tinfoil hat guy. I don't think it's a gigantic pharmaceutical conspiracy, but there's a lot to that conversation.
Yeah, well, I was interested to hear Dr. Zayed say that, 10 to 15 years, what he is doing, which is highly specialized, will be a lot more mainstream. And, I think when it comes to longevity and preventative health, I think that, that could save you from a lot of problems trying to cut things off at the pass before you actually have to treat them.
Right. The facts are the facts. It's a very interesting thing that men in their 40s have literally half the testosterone, free testosterone levels in their bloodstream that they had back in the 40s and 50s. How that occurred, no one can really explain. Maybe it's the processing of food. Maybe it's just lack of physical motivation. We certainly have less physical fitness stuff that's mandatory in schools than we did back then. But when you look around, if you remove all biases from this, you look at what's happening on television, there's advertisements for ED medication. I'm not going to say the words, but ED, you know, the Viagras and the Cialis, and there are people sitting in naked in tubs on mountaintops and stuff like that. Hey, we can fix this. Look at the trillions of dollars in the cholesterol and the diabetes space, the blood sugar stuff. A lot of these things are very, very closely linked. If you find yourself in your 40s and 50s saying, you know, I don't look like I used to, I'm a little soft in the middle, and your motivation starts to go down, and you're saying those things while you're eating a bowl of chips, watching television on the couch, and you haven't moved in 3 hours. But as that process goes on, you get closer to diabetes, and your sleep gets more and more disrupted, and the motivation to go to the gym or get some exercise is less and less. The one thing that everyone keeps on trying to ignore is the fact that testosterone is the fuel for men. This is not some wacky steroid issue. It's actually a mystery of the longevity universe academically, and no one can figure it out. But what they have figured out is you can very, very safely replace that hormone with something that's bioidentical to you. I think Alex is an academic stud. And when you get into conversations with these younger doctors, they're going, I really don't get why the medical community has been ignoring this for so long. I think in the future, it'll be the way it's done. It's really fascinating stuff.
Well, and I think maybe if you've been doing something for so long, you know, that's the way it's always been done, and that's how I've been taught, and that's it. I mean, I think the key is to find a doctor who's not afraid to try something new or look into something innovative instead of just saying, this is how I've done it for 40 years, and this is the way it goes.
Yeah. Look, I have doctor friends of mine in the golf community, friends of mine from the church community that I've known. They ask me about it because they know how academically I've been involved with longevity stuff, and hormone replacement has been really, really on my mind. I talk about it a lot. And the amount that they know is actually kind of shocking. You go, well, you really never researched that? Nah, it's just not in our practice at this point. And, you know, we've heard some things that are critical of it, so we try and stay away. Well, like, why would you stay away? What if it solves a lot of the same issues you're treating people for via medicine? Get off the pills if you can. Let's go out and visit on the phones. Rod in Plymouth, what's happened, Rod?
You know, the debate is Wednesday, and I'm thinking that a great go-to question for both candidates, not just Biden, is the world and our country better off economically and militarily because of what they did and why they say that? Give us some examples so they can both highlight the entire country and even some of our adversaries who will also be listening, what the president, incoming president, what his stance on world views and our country's views are going to be.
Well, good call, Rod. I wonder if there's a miscommunication there. The debate is Thursday, according to everything I've seen. You said Wednesday. Are you off or are we all wrong?
I'm off.
Okay, yeah, don't tune in Wednesday, Rod, because that'd be problematic if you're really trying to get something out of the debate. So, but define economically and militarily better. How would you do that? Because they both have their own versions. Biden's going to say, my economy's done nothing but thrive. Trump's going to say, your economy sucks, buddy, and you need to get booted. Militarily is a totally different issue than economically, which, frankly, economically moves the needle. What is a good economy to you, Rod?
You know, that's an open question. But as long as they both bring the facts and everyone knows whether either of them lie, the people know what's going on in their own personal economic situation. As far as geopolitically or militarily throughout the world, it's a lot less, it's much more unstable than it is stable. So what are they going to do to promote peace? What are they going to promote in the future, ongoing, to promote good economics? Because economics is not just about us in our country. It's worldwide. Everything is global. So they have to convince us that their policies coming on board are going to benefit the world peacefully and economically.
All right. Fair enough. Good call, Rod. Thanks for the help. Mike Parsons, what is a good economy in your mind?
A good economy is I guess I'll just use personal experience. I guess a good economy is having a job where, you know, you work your 40 hours and you have some time left over and you have enough to cover your bills, put some aside and have a little left over.
So economy to you is one that you view through a personal lens. Like, how is my life going right now? Am I stable at work? Is my paycheck enough to cover my needs? Do I feel scared of the future? Is that about right?
Yeah. I mean, I've got no concept of the stock market or Dow or any of that stuff. It's a, you know, can I afford to live my life?
Yeah, that's an interesting paradigm, because I wonder sometimes the lenses through which we view the economy, are they overly personal? Oftentimes the stock market is seen as, this is what the economy is doing. It's really not. They're two separate entities. But when we talk about inflation, the buyability of goods, the consumer price index, the things that we're all looking at as holes in our boat, like how many things are draining the water, i.e. the income that I'm putting in the boat, it's all draining out the bottom. I might be in trouble. But it's interesting to hear people say, well, this is what the economy means to me, because they're both going to make the case that their economy, their version of the economy was better or is currently great. And I don't think either of those renditions of the story are actually true. They either benefit or they suffer from their predecessors' policies and what's happened in the global trend, so on and so forth. COVID did not help the economy for anybody. So a lot of that will be laid at Biden's doorstep. I don't know if that's necessarily true, although he's done plenty of damage on his own. Let's visit with Chris Renwick when we come back at 1:48, and we'll close it out for the day.
All right.
At the 5-yard line we go. I don't want to be rude to any of our callers. Let's go visit quickly with Elaine in Macomb Township. Hi, Elaine. Elaine, how are we doing?
Hey, really well. Hey, I think you found yourself a retirement job. You're doing real good. Well, I just, when I heard that doctor on, now boys and girls are different. I accept that. And it may be that it works well for men, but about 15 years ago, my obstetrician gynecologist booted me out of the practice because she said that I should be doing estrogen replacement therapy, and I went, no, I don't mess with hormones.
Yeah.
And about 5 years later, I got wind of the fact that she had died of breast cancer, and that's exactly why I didn't want to do EST. So before ladies maybe ran out and wanted to do estrogen replacement therapy because testosterone therapy is good, I don't know that they both work the same.
Yeah, good point, Elaine. Thanks for calling in. There's a lot more to it, for sure, and you got to talk to the people who are qualified to give recommendations before you just do something that you heard about on the radio. Right, Chris Renwick? We don't want to say the wrong thing and steer people in the wrong direction.
Never.
Welcome to another edition of Chris Squared. This is an unexpected one for me. I didn't know I was filling in today until kind of the midnight hour, but here we go, and it didn't go that bad.
Look at you. I agree with our last caller. You do a great job. So well done.
Thanks, pal. How you doing?
Everything is well. We've got a busy show again today. And we're going to bring something up in the 3 o'clock hour that I'm not sure so many people know about. But Donald Trump actually talked about it in one of his latest rallies. And he talked about bringing change to Washington, D.C., and there is a project. It's called Project 2025. It is spearheaded by the Heritage Foundation. And you would see, if this was implemented, of course it won't all be, but if it were to be implemented, you would see big slashes to funding to the Department of Justice. You'd see the dismantling of the FBI or the DHS, different departments involving climate change and regulations and all those things. And it would replace a lot of these, what some Republicans know or referred to as the deep state or the swamp, it would be a mass replacement of conservatives into some of these roles. And there is a kind of underlying theme here that Republicans are looking not just to get Donald Trump elected in 2024, but then what the state of the government would be if some of these implementations were put into place. So we'll talk with the person who is spearheading this plan coming up in 3 o'clock hour.
Yeah, that's a fascination of mine, because I believe that Donald Trump has in many ways the intent to do much of what he says. Of course, he ran on that platform, drain the swamp. And ultimately, The swamp didn't get drained. It got shifted around and potentially added to it, John Bolton and others. I don't question really his desire to do such a thing. But I think logistically, sometimes they're just out of their control. And, you know, he had more interim appointees than any president in history. I mean, they couldn't keep anybody in that place longer than about 6 months. And the ones that did get capped are the same ones who say, I will not endorse him at this point. It's kind of a wild scenario. It's a wild west in the Trump cabinet.
Yeah, it's an interesting look. Plus, coming up, we'll do this in the 2 o'clock hour. Donald Trump has quickly closed the cash gap in terms of what they've got in their war chest. And I think, I'll bring this up a little bit, but I think that aside from all the contents of the debate this week, I think the winner or the perceived winner of this debate is going to see a massive influx of cash. If Joe Biden is able to get it together and talk coherently and not mix Egypt with Mexico and all of these things, if he's able to do that, then I think he sees a resurgence in funding. If Donald Trump is able to win this thing and kind of build on the momentum he's got, I mean, look out. It's going to be a boat race for him. So we'll talk to the Trump campaign national press secretary, Karen Lynn Levitt, coming up too.
Yeah, Chris, somebody said, I touched on this earlier. I was having a conversation last week with somebody in my profession, let's call it, because I can't give away names here, whose spouse is a very, very powerful national politician. And I said, what are you expecting with this debate? Do you want to come over? You want to have some popcorn? We'll crack a beer? Mm-hmm. We'll have some laughs?
Sure.
And that person said to me, well, I guess I'm hoping that President Biden does just well enough. How do you read that comment?
If he does just well enough, that means he stays in the race. That means that the DNC and he feel like he's got the distance here. So my read on that is if he does just well enough, he stays in the race and Donald Trump wins.
Yeah. See, as a very kind of on the fence person when it comes to modern politics, not a Trump fan, not a Trump hater, so much as I just want everyone to A, get along, and B, I want old school to be the real school. Let's get back and find a real Republican, a real Democrat, have them fight it out based on merit. But I oftentimes, you have to admit that a politician who's trying to become reelected, what they're really dying for inside, even though they might not say it outwardly, is a real calamity with which they can deal. They can show their mettle to the American people. Trump got COVID. It landed in his lap as a crisis now that has a solution to it. But really, in the midnight hour, he bungled that to a degree, and he certainly bungled it in terms of the debates, how it was delineated to all the people who were on the fence suddenly. Now he's got Biden. He's got Biden literally in his hand. He can beat Biden on almost every metric that's measurable, so long as he doesn't go off and look like a mean guy beating up on a kitten.
Sure.
Can he do
it? Yeah, And there was just a study that was done or some research that was done that said Joe Biden Donald Trump raised the national debt at twice the speed that Joe Biden did. OK, and that's bad, right? I don't think anybody is ever excited about what a particular president or a candidate does. But what I think that most people saw out of those debates back in 2020 was Donald Trump was being bombastic. Donald Trump was going on the offensive. And it, I don't think he came across as well as he meant to. With these rules and regulations that they have in place for this upcoming debate, I think at first glance, people said these are unfavorable to Donald Trump and he's not going to be able to be himself or he's not going to score the points that maybe he did back in 2016. I actually think it could be the opposite for him. Oh, it's totally a little bit of a governor. I think that it gives Joe Biden the stage uninterrupted to try to make his case, and we know what he's been dealing with. So I think these probably benefit him more than most people think.
Yeah, speak softly and carry a big stick, right?
Yeah.
His big stick, Trump's big stick, is to forget about all the nonsense, all the attempts at unseating him, and say, look, dang, do we have it good or what? things were really working. And if I wasn't so distracted by impeachment attempt after impeachment attempt after impeachment attempt with a pandemic thrown in there, it might have been a heck of another 4 years. Let's go back to how that was. He doesn't need to do much except be as humble as a Donald Trump can be, if that's a possibility.
Yeah, and again, I think he points to a lot of these issues going on across the globe, right? Russia was not in Ukraine when he was president. Hamas hadn't invaded Israel and attacked violently during his presidency. He can make the argument that his withdrawal from Afghanistan would have been much more smooth and orderly. So I think he can make all of those arguments, and I think that they can be right. But we'll see how it goes. I can't wait. I'm going to pop some popcorn, no doubt.
You'll be the first on my text list for a little live action report. Have a fantastic
Love it.
Show, Chris Renwick. Everyone in Michigan, thanks for having me in the seat again, against your will, but we had a good time. See you soon.